Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for our show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Henry Frayne, is at the controls this morning. Last summer, the Reverend Joel Hunter was named president-elect of the Christian Coalition. This is, as you know, I'm sure, a very large American Christian political advocacy group. It was started by Pat Robertson and has been in existence now for a number of years. As I mentioned, the Reverend Hunter, our guest for this hour of the show, was named to lead the organization last summer. However, this past November, before he was to take office and he was officially to start on January 1st, he stepped down, apparently in a disagreement over the future direction of the organization. And this is how it was put in a press release that came out in November. Here it is, a quote from our guest. He said that he wanted to expand the issues that the organization dealt with, expand them from only moral ones, such as opposing abortion, redefining marriage, to include compassion issues, such as poverty, justice, and creation care. He also said, and quoting him here, "We need to care as much for the vulnerable outside the womb as inside the womb." He said that he didn't believe that these are issues that fit neatly into the labels of conservative or liberal, Republican or Democrat. He makes much the same argument in a book that he has authored. And the title of his book is Right Wing, Wrong Bird, Why the Tactics of the Religious Right Won't Fly with Most Conservative Christians, in which he makes the argument that the current strategy of the religious right has been too polarizing, that the range of issues discussed has been too limited, and that he thinks perhaps the strategy has focused too closely on political gains. We're pleased to have the Reverend Hunter with us this morning as a guest to talk about some of these ideas. He is, at the moment, he is the senior pastor of Northland Church in Longwood, Florida. He's been there since 1985. Before that, he served as a United Methodist pastor for 15 years in Indiana. He has a Bachelor of Science in Education degree from Ohio University and his Master of Divinity and Doctor of Ministry degrees from Christian Theological Seminary. And he's joining us this morning by telephone. The book, by the way, if you're interested in taking a look at it, is published by Distributed Church Press. And there is also a website that you can look at for the book, which is essentially the title of the book, rightwingwrongbird.com, so that you can do that. And, of course, here on the program, questions, comments are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers to call. Reverend Hunter, hello.
Hi, how are you doing, David?
I'm fine, thanks, and yourself?
Fantastic.
Well, I appreciate you giving us some of your time. Certainly, when all of this happened, when you decided, you and apparently the board of the Christian Coalition decided that this was not the right fit for you to lead the organization at the time, it certainly got a lot of attention in the media, I think in part because perhaps some people on the left side of the political spectrum found some reason to rejoice in discord on the right, but also I think because some people said that it reflected the fact that within the community of conservative Christians, evangelical Christians, there first of all there were different viewpoints, and that maybe in fact something important was going on with that movement, in the sense that perhaps there were people who were arguing that the most divisive wedge issues, the cultural issues, maybe weren't the most important things, or that at the very least, that it would be good to start concentrating on some different issues. Do you in fact think that actually is happening, and that is there is a kind of a broadening of the agenda among conservative Christians?
I do think so, David. I think there's an emerging constituency that is really significant in number, that is ready to mature the movement beyond personally moralistic issues, which are very important, which will never go away, to the more communally moral issues that say, how do I love my neighbor in terms of social policy? How do I get involved in ways that will really benefit the marginalized? And so I think what you're seeing is really the maturing of a movement. It started out as a movement against stuff, and now it's kind of growing, you know, beyond that middle school era where you define yourself by what you hate, into the more significant maturing era of how you define yourself by what you're for.
Do you, I guess that some people have this tendency to see conservative evangelical Christians as a kind of a monolithic movement. Is it, do you think that it actually is the case that there are people who identify themselves as conservative Christians, but in fact weren't really identifying with the organized effort to kind of get everybody together behind an agenda that is exemplified by an organization like the Christian Coalition?
Absolutely. I'm on the board of the National Association of Evangelicals, and I can tell you that the tone and the exclusivity of the issues made most of us cringe. And so I think this is what's happening here, and what you're seeing is I'm a nobody. I'm just a pastor like other pastors, and the reason that this has such legs in the news media is not because it's something totally new, but it's starting to express something that's already there. There's a great breadth in political and compassion views within what has been very simply characterized or caricatured as the evangelical movement. And there are people all the way from the extreme right that are very fundamentalists that just don't play well with others, to those that are more what you would call liberal, although they still are concerned about the personal moral issues, and they think that's very important also. So there's a very significant spectrum of breadth within our movement.
Yeah. I think that certainly if you go out and you ask people, what do you think is wrong with American politics today? I'm sure that for a lot of people, one of the things at the top of their list would be the fact that it had become increasingly polarized, to the point where it seems that we're really not getting anything done because so much of the debate is at the extremes.
Yes.
So for that reason, I think that there is increasing interest among a lot of people, whether they define themselves as conservative or Republican, an effort to say, now look, there have got to be some things that we actually do agree on, and that we maybe it would make more sense to start with those things that we agree on, and then we might actually go someplace. So in your interest in kind of to refine or perhaps broaden the agenda, is it mostly that you're interested in getting conservative Christians involved who maybe otherwise would have been alienated by the terms of the debate, or are you thinking about the fact that this actually makes it more possible for people who would define themselves as conservatives to be able to sit down and talk with people who would define themselves as liberals?
Yes, the answer to your question. let me just give you a quick both of those are very important. I think that to get the larger number of evangelical Christians involved, and it has been said that a third of all people in this nation go to an evangelical church or those that define themselves as an evangelical church. But yet most pastors are scared to death of getting their congregations involved in citizenship responsibilities or politics because they're afraid that they will be divided and they will become much too immersed in the whole political milieu. But if you can say to them, no, these are issues that come straight out of Scripture, and therefore it's not about politics, it's about Christians expressing their values as a citizen, as we are expected to do as citizens, then they're going to be more open to that. And so there will be very many more Christians, I think, that are involved in the public square. The other part of this, though, as you very accurately observed, is there are a number of us that want to be bridge people. We want to cooperate with those that we wouldn't ordinarily agree with, but we don't feel like cooperation is the same thing as compromise. We don't compromise who we are, but we cooperate with people that we never thought we would. For example, let me give you an example. Mm-hmm. You may have seen in the news a number of those of us in leadership in the evangelical community are in a new cooperative group with some of the leading scientists of America when it comes to creation care. Now, most of these scientists, most of them are, you know, the most well-known scientists in America, E.O. Wilson, James Hansen, who's the head of NASA, the Goddard Space Institute at NASA. I mean, you'd know them. Most of them are from Harvard or you know, Johns Hopkins. Many of them are secular humanists, that we wouldn't agree on the origins of the Earth or the development of man and so on and so forth. But what we both agree on is we have a moral obligation to take care of creation. And so there's this new alliance for this particular purpose. And we have formed friendships. We love each other. But both of us feel this moral imperative to do what's good for everybody. So that's just a good example of really what's happening these days.
Well, in a particular example like that here now, you will have two groups where they have very different ideas about something as basic a notion as, you know, how did the universe come to be? Is that something then when if you sit down and then you say, well, what we're here to talk about is how it is we take care of the universe as it is, do you then agree to say, well, that other stuff about does God exist, is evolution a scientific fact, all that, do we just say, well, for the purposes of this discussion, we're just going to leave that at the door?
It's exactly what you do. These are ad hoc groups for a specific project. Now, as we develop our friendships, of course we'll talk about those other things. They were surprised to see that you could believe in what we call intelligent design, and they call evolution, that you could believe in evolution and still be an evangelical Christian. That shocked them, because everything they've seen of Christianity, they've seen on TV, and it had big hair and lace Bibles attached to it. And so that's their version of Christianity. Of course, they would be a little bit intimidated or turned off by that. What we thought we would get is, scientists from Harvard is a bunch of, condescending, arrogant, intellectual snobs. And these are the most wonderful people, most humble people. And so what will happen in these groups is that you'll form relationships and you will be able to share your basic values. But the work of the group stays very focused on the issue that you're trying to accomplish. And as long as you can accomplish that together, you've done what's good for everybody and not just what's good for your own group.
Mm. Well, I can see that a lot of people would embrace this kind of pragmatic approach to solving a particular problem when you say, we all agree that there's a problem, and let's see what we can do to work together to a solution. I could, though, also imagine some religious people of saying something like, well, but I can't leave the notion of does God exist at the door. I mean, to me, that's too, I just can't say, well, maybe that's really not important for us to be talking about.
Yeah. Well, we don't feel like we leave that at the door. We feel like there is an appropriate time and place when that is the topic of discussion. And when that is the topic of discussion, then certainly we will share our hearts and the reason that we believe what we believe, and we can engage in philosophical discussions and defend the faith at those points. But if those are not the focus of the discussion, if that's not the agenda item, then to bring that in as kind of a pot shot or a a foreign concept and just to land it in the middle of a conversation, it's just not appropriate. And so if you go in convinced that you have to convert somebody, then you probably don't need to be in the conversation at all.
Mm. Let me introduce again our guest. We're talking with Reverend Joel Hunter. He is senior pastor at Northland Church in Longwood, Florida. And as I explained at the beginning of the program, last summer he was tapped to lead the Christian Coalition. And if things had gone according to plan, he would have taken over as the leader, the president of the Christian Coalition of America on January 1st. However, last November, he, after discussions with the board of the coalition, decided that he really wasn't the guy for them, and maybe they decided that he wasn't either, because he was interested, as he has explained here, in perhaps broadening the kinds of issues that the organization was concerned with, as he said, to move away from these things that are exclusively moral issues to go on to issues, things like poverty and justice and the environment. And again, as I mentioned, he lays out some of these, some of the same kinds of arguments. If you're interested in looking at a book that he's authored, in a book that's titled Right Wing, Wrong Bird, and the subtitle is Why the Tactics of the Religious Right Won't Fly with Most Conservative Christians, in which he makes the argument that this strategy has been too polarizing, it has emphasized a range of issues that were too limited, and instead of focusing on more spiritual kind of results, he said it was focused much more on winning politically. So, again, if you're interested, you can take a look at the book. And questions are welcome to 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. You've talked a little bit about the environment as being the kind of issue where people who either would say that they were people of faith or that they weren't, or people who would define themselves as being on the right or on the left, this was the kind of an issue where it's possible for people with different viewpoints on other things to sit down and say, well, on this, we agree. And we can actually talk about how it is we can all work together because we agree this is a common goal. What are some other issues where you think that same kind of meeting of the minds in the middle, so to speak, could take place?
Well, any human rights, human benefit issue, we would bring the biblical perspective. In other words, we want to take care of the creation because we have a direct commandment in Scripture, Genesis 2:15, to cultivate and keep or protect the land, the garden. And so for us, it's a biblical and moral imperative. It's not a political thing. It's this is how we obey God. They want to do it because they want their kids and grandkids to have a wonderful earth, you know. So anytime you say, okay, for example, what do you do with the epidemic of AIDS? That is a very important issue, I think, for evangelical Christians, because to follow Jesus, you have to care about healing the sick. That's what he did when he was down here. The poor, very important issue. He really had a deep concern all through Scripture. God cares deeply for the poor, and that those of us who have been blessed take care of the poor. Human rights issues. When one part of Christ's description of his own job, that's in Luke chapter 4, was that to set the captive free. And so when it comes to issues like slavery, the sex slave trade, and freedom in one's particular country to be, or the dignity of a human to be treated with respect, that's very important to a Christian because it was very important to Christ. But I would also suppose that any person with a moral conscience, whether they believed in God or not, these issues would also be important to them. Mm-hmm. So these are issues that all we can work together. We don't have to have the same exact motivation, but we do have the same concerns. And so if we have the same concerns, why can't we get together on these things? And if Christians can be convinced to work with others on these things. I was talking with Ed Wilson, and he said, you know, you're probably wondering why a secular humanist like myself would be interested in engaging in a conversation with the evangelical Christian. And he said, if you take all the secular humanists that belong to a secular humanist association in the U.S., they would probably add up to about 5,000 people. And in just the organization that you're on the board for, there's 30 million represented. So if we can get the Christians around the globe, there's 2 billion Christians around the globe, and if we can get them interested in loving their neighbor through social policy as well as through person-to-person ministry, there could be a tremendous change in this world.
I can still imagine that if you take an issue that previously has been kind of polarizing, or at least you have very different ideas about how to deal with it. And let's, for example, let's take AIDS. It's one thing to get together a group of people who all say this is a very serious issue, and we really need to do everything we can do to limit the spread of this disease, because it's devastating and kills a lot of people, and it's particularly has been devastating in developing countries.
Right.
So then you say, though I can imagine some difficulty when we actually get down to talking about, well, in what way do we meet this challenge if we have, I'm sure I'm talking about stereotypes, but if we have one group of people saying, well, the way that we do this is to tell people that you shouldn't have sex before marriage or outside of marriage, and that the other group of people says, well, this is not a moral issue, it's a public health issue, and what we should be doing with people is educating them as to the causes of AIDS and then handing out condoms. I mean, do we still get to a difficulty where we take the first step and we say, we all agree this is important, and then the next question is, well, what do we do? It seems that there's still a possibility for a lot of disagreement about what's the right strategy.
Right. Well, you will. I mean, there's going to be things that you can't cooperate on. For example, if you have conservative Catholics, they're not going to want to hand out condoms.
Yeah.
But maybe you don't talk about, in that case, you know, you have the secular group handing out condoms and the Catholics going, now we're going to go for abstinence education. But maybe both of them agree on how they can take care of AIDS orphans. Because those are the kids. There's no moral quandary there. These kids have lost their parents. They're living in poverty, and together we could take care of the orphans. So you find the issue that both of you can cooperate on, and you admit the issues that you can't.
We have a couple of callers to bring into the conversation, and certainly people who are listening are welcome to join us with questions or comments. The only thing we ask, and I try to mention this occasionally, the only thing we ask is that people just try to be brief so that we can keep moving and get in as many different people as possible. But listeners are welcome to call in. 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. And we have a couple of people here lined up and ready to go in Champaign. Both of them will start with line one. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to talk with a Ohio University alum.
All right. A Bucca or a Bobcat.
Whatever. I was in the 70s.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'll state what my position is, and then, you know, in terms of a comment from you. A little bit of a cold here. In the buildup to the war in Iraq, I felt that all Christians should have taken some kind of position, you know, regarding war, you know, that kind of thing. So I don't know what you feel about it, or what your stance is, or what.
Mm-hmm. I think that. Well, again, you have a whole breadth in Christianity about what is appropriate, what are the appropriate prerequisites before you go into war. And I think you would have many saying, okay, let's go back to the just war theory. What is a justifiable war? You have others who just don't think it through and just say, look, we got hit, we got to hit back. And so they don't really engage at a deep philosophical level on their response to the attack, or their response to what they think could be an imminent attack, and so on and so forth. So anytime you say, I think it'd be good for all Christians to state their position on the war, that's a very difficult thing, because you have so many varieties of Christians in this country, and all along the political spectrum. And so that's a, unless you're talking about one organization, that's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, but it didn't. It seemed to me that there was very little discussion among Christians regarding the war.
Well, it depends on what group. And again, you'd go to a Jim Wallace group, Sojourners. They had a very sophisticated response. Ron Sider and some of the others did, about the necessity of peace and peacemaking. From a lot of conservative groups, you're right, there wasn't much dialogue. It was much more visceral, a visceral response, rather than a good theological approach to reason out, okay, what would be the best Christ-like approach to this.
Well, you're doing a great job, so thanks very
much. Well, thanks for the call. We'll go on to another caller here. This is someone also in Champaign, and it's line number 2. Hello.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I'm real excited to hear what you're talking about, because I grew up in a fairly conservative Christian background, Church of Christ, but I'm also a scientist, and I have my doctorate in environmental biology, and it's great to hear somebody talking about social responsibility and how that applies to everybody, whether it's a scientist or whether it's, Christians or people that are religious, that, it's more than just, like you said, about issues that you don't like. It's also about, how are we socially responsible to each other and to the planet and things like that. So I'm really... I am enjoying what you're saying. Thanks.
All right. Well, thank
those
you.
Are very wise comments, by the way. And I may your tribe increase. I think that's one of the things that occurs to me as she was talking is we have become a nation that are driven by talk show hosts rather than diplomats and statesmen, rather than philosophers and good teachers. We are fascinated with people who can make us angry and provoke us into some sort of reaction and pretend that an enemy is in a category. You know, the liberals are the enemy, or the, all Muslims are the enemy, and all of that kind of stuff. And I think that it's time that we as a nation really matured out of that kind of thinking into the reasonable places where we can cooperate. My wife is a biologist, by the way, and so it really is helpful for her and I. My background is history and government and philosophy, and so the fact that we're married together, I think, is symbolic. I think that's where we're going in the future. And again, these scientists that we're tied to right now. State very simply, religion and science are the two most powerful forces in this world. And if they can cooperate, oh my goodness, what can we do?
Yeah. Pick up on an earlier point about how it is that for political organizations, no matter where they are on the political spectrum, how useful wedge issues can be. I believe that you have said in an interview that I read, and I'm sure that other people would have said the same things, liberal, conservative, that when you get people mad, it's a good time to ask them for money.
Yeah.
And that those kinds of issues have, in fact, been very good for organizations all along the political spectrum to raise money, and that no doubt has added to the intensity of the polarization.
Absolutely. Well, you've hit on a very important point here, and I'm sure your listening audience is sophisticated enough to realize that very large organizations have been built from a response to fear, and the secondary response, of course, is anger. And those are the two largest provocations to involvement and to fundraising. It was said to me on the way into this thing, the best way to raise money is to get people afraid and get people mad. And I just wasn't willing to go there. That's never what Jesus did. And my whole deal is I want to represent Jesus well. And, of course, I fail again and again. And all of us are pretty poor advertisements for Jesus. But I can't imagine that we would build an organization or that we would be involved with organizations that just kept us mad the whole time. If God is love, then we ought to be doing people good instead of just exploiting their anger.
It seems, I'm sure, though, at the same time that therefore there are some people here, again, no matter where you are in the spectrum, that there's a matter of principle here connected with some particular issue that for them is a bottom line, no negotiation issue.
Yes.
And the ones that are the most hot button issues, those are the ones that people think of. It might be abortion, it might be your attitude towards homosexuality, who knows, wherever it is, where people might have, one person might say abortion is murder, full stop, that's it, no negotiation. Uh-huh. And another person would say, well, I don't believe that, and in fact I think a woman's right to choose is a supreme right. And there, it seems like for some people who would say, you know, maybe we can talk about some other things, but at the end of the day, there's something on which I simply will not compromise. And I guess I see some, maybe sometimes the inability to compromise on something that means the whole conversation is somehow a non-starter because we know that at the end of the day, there'll be something that there's no talking about. So then right. Does that lead people to say, well, because that's true, then we might as well just not talk at all?
I hope not, David. I think you've put your finger on something very important here. I'm not looking to build more moderates. I love people with passion. I love people with great causes that won't compromise their basic values. But at the same time, if you have a basic value, I'm very pro-life. As a matter of fact, I see all of these issues as an extension of pro-life. You know, I see the environmental issue as an extension of pro-life. I am very passionate about not redefining marriage. I don't think we have that right. But at the same time, if I can't agree to disagree with someone else and still treat them with respect, and still treat them with somebody who, and in this country, we built this country out of a system of checks and balances, out of a dialogue of disagreement. That's what's wonderful about this country. And so if I can't still do that and treat somebody with respect, you know, Jesus said, love your enemies, pray for them. And so if I can't do that, then I'm not being a great Christian. I'm just being a very hard moralist.
We're a little bit past here, maybe more than a little bit past our midpoint, and I want to again introduce our guest, Reverend Joel Hunter. He's senior pastor of Northland Church in Longwood, Florida. And as I explained back at the beginning of the program, last summer in July, he was named to head the Christian Coalition and would have assumed those responsibilities on the 1st of January. However, last fall in November, after talking with the board of the coalition, they all decided that he would not be the guy to lead the organization, and it had a lot to do with the fact that he believed that it was important for conservative Christians to move on from the kind of hot-button issues, wedge issues that were so much discussed. And again, as he said, he wanted to expand the issues from only the moral ones, things like opposing abortion, redefining marriage, to include what he called compassion issues, poverty, justice, and environmental ones. And he'd written about some of his ideas in a book titled Right Wing, Wrong Bird, Why the Tactics of the Religious Right Won't Fly with Most Conservative Christians. Distributed Church Press is the publisher. And basically, he makes the same argument that he says that a lot of conservative Christians just don't resonate with this, with the effort to organize politically, because that they feel that the tone has been polarized, that the issues have been limited, and that maybe there was too much of a focus on making political gains. Questions welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. You know, I think it was the case that for a long time that religious people didn't get very much involved in politics because they were focused not on the here and now, but in what happens later, what happens after. The idea of spiritual perfection with a much more forward-looking kind of perspective. There has been an effort in the past few decades to organize Christians, not just conservative ones, but certainly conservative ones, to work on certain political issues. But there, sometimes I think there's been this same criticism of conservative Christians that somehow they're still not really focused on the here and now, and that they still have this idea that, well, what happens now is important, but that's really not the main focus. And one of these days we're not going to be here anymore, and so what happens to the earth doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder how it is you reflect on, and particularly that kind of criticism that says a lot of evangelical Christians are still they're not thinking about taking care of the world, because they say ultimately that really doesn't matter. That's not the most important realm. That's not the realm that we're going to live in for eternity. We're just going to be here for a while, and it really doesn't matter.
Yeah. I would say that their theology's really messed up, and let me tell you why. In the first place, it says in Matthew 25, we're going to be judged precisely for how we took care of the vulnerable down on this earth. Because Jesus is represented in that vulnerable, you know, at the judgment day, the Bible says that he looks at the ones who are going into heaven. He says, you know, when I was thirsty, you gave me to drink. When I was hungry, you fed me. When I was naked, you clothed me. And they're surprised. When did we do that? He said, even as you did to the least of these, you did it to me. If you look at the history of Christianity, the very early church grew. This is in Rodney Stark's The Rise of Christianity, by the way. And Rodney was not a Christian at the time. He was just a sociologist wondering how the church grew like it did. And what he found was not only did they have a good theology of the afterlife, but it was coupled with when there were epidemics in the first few centuries. Everybody would run for the hills to save their own life. Everybody except Christians who would stay behind and take care of the sick, not just the sick of the Christians, but the sick of the non-Christians. And that really made people curious about, well, they're not afraid of death, and they have compassion on those who really need them. And so Christianity has this great history of being involved with the community. We have this history of being anti-slavery. We have this history of championing women's suffrage, the vote, and so on and so forth. And it wasn't until the last, or the few decades at the beginning of this century that we kind of dropped out after the Scopes monkey trial. But then we kind of reawakened after the 60s, and it looked like all our morals were sliding into the abyss. Then we got provoked again. But the deep history of our faith is that we have always loved those who needed love, and that's how we grew. That's how we presented this wonderful theology of the afterlife.
Well, we have a number of other callers here now. In fact, the lines have filled up, so we'll see how many people we can accommodate. And last, we have about 10 minutes, a little bit more left. So let's start talking with some other folks here. Next up is someone in Gibson City, not very far away from us. It's line number one. Hello.
Hello. I just wanted to thank you for being on and being a guest here. It's good to hear some more voices, those of us in the of evangelical Christians who, as you say, see a wider thing, Christianity being more than just abortion and gay marriage. It's good to see more evangelicals realizing that.
Thank you.
The other thing is, you had an earlier caller that was talking about war, and you mentioned the people that, with the gut response, they hit us, we got to hit them, and the people that go to just war. You forgot one large group of Christians, the ones that I come from, the historic peace churches, the Mennonites and the Brethren.
Yes, yeah, you're right. You're exactly right. They have a very well-developed theology on war and on peace.
And on peace, yeah. Mm-hmm. And on service to others.
That's right, they do.
I work... As a Mennonite, I work, among other things, with Christian Peacemaker teams and Mennonite Disaster Service.
Well, I'm a big admirer of yours. I think you're a wonderful part of our family.
Well, I was sorry to see that you having problems with the organization. I hope that God will enlighten them, and they'll realize, too, that they need to expand. And I'm going to get off and let other people talk.
All right.
But thank you for being on.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Presenting the message. Thank you.
Well, let's go on. We'll talk next with someone in Chicago, and this is line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Oh, yes. Hello. Good morning. I have a comment on the, various issues that you bring in. I know that, as a Christian, I'm a Christian and a Catholic, and I believe that all the issues are really important. But when you get into certain issues, there's not a clear-cut teaching or definition. For instance, when you talk about, poverty, there's different theories, different models on how to overcome poverty. And it seems that to mix these in with the clear-cut issues, such as, abortion and, homosexual relationships, it's really mixing apples with oranges. And this is the problem with, I think, a lot of the more, traditional Christians have with that type of, approach.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's a very complex thing. Nobody ever said these things are simple, and I would be the last one to say, okay, here is our be-all and end-all approach to poverty. I'm just saying that needs to be a part of the consideration that we take into the public square, that we're concerned that poor people have a fairness about their circumstance and a chance to be able to. That's what was in Deuteronomy chapter 11, I think it is, when Jesus said, "The poor will always be with you." If you read that passage in Deuteronomy, it talks about giving them the means to become producers, as well as everybody else having those means. And so, it's not just handing out money or redistributing wealth. It's really empowering people to become producers as well.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let's go to another caller here, someone in Edgar County in line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I happen to be a secular humanist, mm-hmm. and I am often put in a situation of people going to shock when I say that, after they first ask, well, what's that?
Yes.
And, the thing is that I didn't start out this way, mm-hmm. and yet at the same time, it was going to a school which had a religious affiliation and taking comparative religion, which did it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically came up with the fact that I didn't like all the infighting.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I am, and my answer when people said, well, don't you believe in God? And I say, well, I don't know whether I'm intelligent enough to comprehend that. And yet, I have a friend that is a leader in the Darwinist, philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And my oldest friend, as a matter of fact, from college, he and I went through the same thing. So,
mm-hmm.
Anyway, the thing is, I was talking to a friend of mine in New York yesterday who was interviewing someone who had talked to Liza Minnelli, and I've never thought of Liza Minnelli as a philosopher, but she gave this quote to him, and he remembered it. And the quote is, "Religion is for people who are afraid of hell, and spirituality is for people who have been in hell."
Hmm. Interesting.
Yes, I thought it was very interesting. I didn't expect it from that source.
Yeah. Well, people surprise you every once in a while, don't they?
Yes, but that I think there's something to that.
Hmm.
That I had a niece, who is just, she's from Oklahoma, a little bit,
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, eternity is a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't answer that.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just wanted to share my thought, and I wanted to tell you that there's a new philosopher on the crest.
That is good to hear. I'll be on the alert.
Well, I thank you for the call. Let's go on here to another caller, and this is line number 2, and the caller's in Charleston. Hello.
Hello. I'm a first-time caller to any radio show ever. First of all, thank you. Very inspiring conversation. I think that we really have more similarities than differences, and so I'm a firm believer in teamwork. Okay, the reason I'm calling is I love the Earth, and I'm feeling very pained about how it's being treated, and I'm very curious and frightened at what I'm looking around at. I'm studying to become a teacher, so I'm working with children right now as well as college students. And we have certain wants and needs, and we all know what our needs are, air and water and just the like. And then when it comes to wants, and I'm thinking our wants are freedom and cooperation and trust and this kind of thing. And I'm starting a study. I'm not exactly sure where it's going to be going, but I'm going to be asking for people to write down what their wants are. And so far, it's coming up with things like a Game Boy and a trip to the Bahamas and all these things that we're becoming so disconnected from humanity that it is just, I'm so curious and frightened about it at the same time. And I wanted to ask if you have any suggestions for me on, and from the last call too, I think I may be a secular humanist as well. I don't have a description of, with religion, but I just feel some powerful connectedness to everything, you know, and everyone. But should I just wait till I'm in the classroom to make my effect? I mean, I have no clue what to do, but I feel like I have something I need to do.
What grade are you thinking about teaching?
Because of my freedom that I would have with music and art and humanity and my time in the classroom, I'm thinking somewhere between kindergarten and second grade.
Great.
Although I've begun tutoring in the sixth grade as well, and I can't find people and children that I don't like to work with.
Well, let me give you just an idea here.
Yeah.
It's when I was talking with some of my new scientist friends, I said, "How did you get so interested in your field?" For example, again, Ed Wilson spent a good deal of his life studying ants, and the answer was always the same. When I was little, I'd go down to the creek, and I was so interested in the frogs and the bugs and the leaves and so on and so forth. What the problem that most people have is that they're disconnected from creation these days. You know, kids spend all their time in front of a TV playing the latest video game instead of actually going out in the backyard and seeing what God's made.
Yes.
And I think that if you spend time with the kids outside, if you can do that, and you can do little experiments with nature, and you can reconnect them with the planet, they will be much more likely to be appreciative and protective than just teaching them about it.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, thanks for the call. We are growing short on time here. We're down to our last couple of minutes. Something I'm interested in having you talk a little bit about as a pastor, first of all, and also as someone who is obviously interested in having people of faith organize and put their beliefs into practice, trying to actually, you know, go someplace with them.
Yeah.
I think one of the criticisms, again, has been made of, and this pretty much seems to be a criticism that's made of conservative Christians, and maybe the same sorts of things goes on among liberal Christians, but criticism is that too often that preachers from the pulpit are telling their parishioners what to do, who to vote for, and I guess I'm just interested in, and again, as a pastor, how you think about your leadership role in not so much as it applies to being a spiritual leader, but being a political leader? Or do you think that part of that is part of your role?
Well, I think that, no, politics is clearly secondary. Politics is simply a method with which we express our love of God and our values that we find in the life of Christ. So the job of a pastor is never to tell somebody how to vote. The job of a pastor is to teach those values that Jesus taught us and to say, look, you've got the voting spectrum in front of you. You pray. You figure out how God would want you to vote according to those values. You vote that. So we never get down to treating someone as if they didn't have intelligence, or as if they couldn't find from God or find a sense from God as to who to vote for. Our job is to teach scriptural values and let people do the rest.
Do you, we talked way back in the beginning of the conversation about the fact that maybe you were interested both in doing some coalition building, getting people of different viewpoints together to work on issues that they all thought were important, and at the same time, perhaps also getting more conservative Christians engaged politically, people that might have been alienated before by the tone of the debate.
Yes.
Looking at just that part, do you? I suppose some people will say that in fact, that the kind of political influence that conservative Christians had, maybe going back to the 80s, that it's waned somewhat. I wonder, do you in fact think that that's true? And is that a concern?
I think it's true. And when you come to the very narrow groups, those groups, by very definition, will become more and more marginalized. So they will become less and less effective. What is yet to be seen is this emerging group of broader evangelical Christians. We don't have a political party. We don't have an organization right now. And we're not tremendously organized. And so it'll be interesting to see in the next few years what happens with this group of people, because we are huge in numbers. And we're very much like this younger generation that's coming up. That doesn't have the old geezer categories. I'm close to 60 here, so I put everything in a category. But the younger generation doesn't. They said, look, I don't care what party. I don't care what label. Just give me something constructive to do, and I'll do it. And so I think that's what we're going to be seeing. And just what it's going to look like is yet to be seen.
Our guest, the Reverend Joel Hunter, senior pastor of Northland Church in Longwood, Florida. As we have explained, last summer he was named to head the Christian Coalition. He was named president-elect, would have taken over January 1st, but last fall decided that he would not be able to lead the organization because he was arguing for an expansion of the agenda, as we have discussed. And if you're interested in getting a little bit more of his thinking, you can look for his book, Right Wing, Wrong Bird, Why the Tactics of the Religious Right Won't Fly with Most Conservative Christians. That's a subtitle, Distributed Church Press. Reverend Hunter, thank you very much.
I'm honored. Thank you.